For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
All right. Welcome to a very special Pro Football Docs Sports Injury Central podcast here. We're in the presence of greatness here today. The great Steve Fezzik is in the Sports Injury Central Six Score War Room here. We spent some time chatting and exchanging stories and advantages this morning, and we have to throw you on a podcast here, and since we're in the same room. So, Steve, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me. Thank you for the kind words. We're already talking like football contests that we're potentially going to be playing in and the like, and I'm just, hey, I'm humbled. I hope I can hold up my own. I'm on the road here, and I'm used to playing at home.
He took time away from a family vacation here to come into the war room here, so we appreciate it. And when I first met Steve, I mean, it was just sort of natural. We just kept talking about all sorts of different things, not just about sports or even the gambling angles or injuries, but just other things, like even this morning talking about how my theory about how, the tush push is different. And it's not just related to Jalen Hurts or Jason Kelce, but I appreciate all your insight and stories. And I knew you were really good at what you did. I mean, how many people can make a living doing pro sports gambling? And so obviously, you've done it a long time, very successfully. And actually, when we first met, I think it was almost because I hit a golf ball into your backyard and broke a window, almost. He lives on a nice golf course in Las Vegas. It was by happenstance that I happened to be golfing there when we were texting, et cetera there. But obviously, you won tons of contests and other things. So tell us a little bit about your story. I mean, it's a little unusual that you know, there aren't that many of you out there that truly do this for a living. And you're not like this, you sell picks, but that's not how you make your main living. You make your main living doing your gambling work.
Yeah. So like Steve Fezzik bio, 45 seconds. So I was a math geek, actuary, working in downtown Los Angeles, started coming up to Vegas in the 1990s or Reno, one or the other, every weekend or every other weekend when I got busy. And I found, hey, I'm making more than what I'm making with my corporate gig here as a vice president, and it's a lot more fun. And I was one of the first guys, like right off the bat, they say, if you can just spot one thing that no one else is aware of, be aware of something like your obviously claim to fame is you're so good with the injuries. And if you can price these injuries better than anyone else, all the other factors, if they roughly equal out, but you've got something, you've got the ace of spades, you got the trump card. And that was really where I was in the 90s, that before closing line value was king, I kept talking about, wow, if you can get and be able to bet on a team -4 and it closes -6.5, you are going to win. You know, just that was crystal clear to me that the market was at least semi-efficient at close. So if there was a way to get at soft numbers, that was going to be a ticket to be able to beat the bookie in the -110. And absolutely, now it's becoming, everyone knows that now, but people didn't know that back in the mid-1990s.
Gotcha. And, you know, you must have been doing pretty well. You had a big, cushy vice president insurance job and decided that this was your passion. So that's awesome.
Yeah. And it, you know, it was a different world. I remember I would like leave downtown LA at like 12:30 on a Friday when I flew, and I get to LAX at 1. I just park my car, change in my car, run to the airport, Terminal 1, and like I'd be on a 145. You know, it's like getting through security was so much easier and the like. It was just a different world.
Now, do you like football, love football, or is it the gambling piece, or is it the sports side, or is it both, or what? Tell us about what, where you stand on
that.
What
a great question. I used to like football, and then it grew to a love. I really, when I was just getting out of college, and I mean, growing up in Ohio, Dayton, Ohio, Bob Trumpy, Kenny Anderson, Cincinnati Bengals, Yucky Shuffle. But we were a baseball town. So I used to love baseball, liked football. And then somewhere along the lines, it was just so much easier to win betting football than betting baseball that football became my favorite sport because it was easily my most profitable sport from the get-go.
Interesting. A lot of people say football is hard and the NFL is hard, but you like it a lot.
You know, I hear that. I disagree. All right. And part of the reason is the product. There's so much that you can bet on. So right now, you can bet on any game of the 18 weeks in the NFL season. So think about this. I mean, I can't bet on a Toronto's Tampa Bay game in August in baseball, but people say, oh, there's so many baseball games. You got 15 games a day. There's so much better opportunities. Well, I can bet any game side or total in the NFL right now. Surely I can find opportunities with so much product available. We're not even talking about player props. Pre-production, we were talking about, my goodness, seems like a third of the quarterbacks, you know, get injured severely during the course of the season. So if we bet every quarterback's, you know, passing yardage under, we're going to win 10 of them just by injury alone, right?
Yeah, I don't want to be grave chasing or, you know, hoping for injuries. I mean, we sit here on Sundays and hope for it to be boring, but inevitably, you know, what I always say, I don't know if you ever heard me say this, is that football is not a contact sport. You raise an eyebrow. They hear me out. Basketball is a contact sport. Football is not a contact sport. Football is a collision sport.
Mm.
Big difference. I learned this early on. Natron Means. Remember that name? When I'm old enough that I started in the NFL in San Diego when mm-hmm. Natron Means was the running back. I worked in Minnesota with the Vikings, a little bit with the Bears, et cetera. But that guy was a tough runner. And on Monday mornings, after his 20 to 25 carries, he could barely walk.
Mm-hmm.
That stiff and sore the next day. And what I came to realize is, think about this. If you carry the ball 20 times, how many hits do you take as a running back? Let's say you ran out of bounds 2-3 times. But sometimes you get hit more than once.
36 and a half.
Okay. But here's the key. Let's say you're a tough runner and let's say it's 36 and a half, okay? And you're delivering blows too as a running back. But how many, 36 and a half hits by how many different players?
Yeah.
Guess.
By eight different players if the safeties aren't involved. Okay. Really all, probably okay. All but one. 10 of the defenders.
Okay, so it's one player colliding 36 and a half times mm-hmm. against 8, 10, 6, whatever it is, other players. So are we surprised that they're beat up,
you know,
et cetera? I mean, that's why I say it's a collision sport.
And obviously, I think about Earl Campbell. And anyone who watched Earl Campbell run probably is the epitome of no business decision, just ran over people for the first 3 years in the league. And then basically just wasn't the same player.
No question. And, you know, even if you say Earl Campbell's really big and he's bigger than some of the people hitting him, but you're getting hit by 8-10 different people, and some of them are as big or bigger. And remember, it's not like they're all just taking you head on, you're getting hit from the sides too in all directions. So that's why I say football is a collision sport.
So Josh Allen under for to make it through the season. He's the one quarterback that runs a lot that stayed healthy, and it's just unsustainable, right?
You know, I mean, if you really look at the history of the NFL and runners, I mean, who's the guy that has the longest active start streak in forever as a quarterback? A guy who cannot run. My guy, Philip Rivers, right?
I was going to say Brett Favre and Rivers, right, would be the two that pop into my mind.
Well, Brett Favre got injured a bunch, but had an incredible ability to try and play through.
Yes.
Philip had some of his injuries, no question, but he wasn't very mobile. Look, if you look at the Ironmans of the league recently, I mean, Rivers, clearly. Peyton Manning, before his neck issue, was an Ironman. To some extent, Eli. Tom Brady, 1 year with the ACL, to some extent. Kind of the immobile pocket crew. Mm-hmm. It's not the running crew quarterback current generation that have been able to sustain. No question Josh Allen has bucked the odds, and yes, he's really big so far. But yeah, I mean, when you run a lot, you take a lot of hits.
So if Indianapolis starts well, maybe a team we might look to fade, Anthony Richardson, not just unsustainable that to keep playing the way he has.
Well, in the short sample size, he's had tremendous success. But I would say that I won't say unsustainable because I don't want to ever doubt anybody. But I would say tough to sustain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to talk about recent examples of going against bucking that trend. Up until the last few years, you might say Russell Wilson was able to buck that trend a little bit as well. And he's not like the big Josh Allen.
Great example.
Run you over guy. So it's not absolute, right? I mean, it's really as simple as, are you more likely to tear your ACL skiing down a double black diamond or on a blue and green run? You could do it on either, but I mean, you're more likely on the double black diamond. So the more double black diamond runs you take, the more the chance. But that doesn't, it's odd. So it's not guaranteed. You know, you can buck trends.
You know, what's interesting is, so when we project how many games teams are going to win, the natural reaction is, well, let's do a power rating based upon a team's strength week one. And we'll just run a Monte Carlo simulation for the entire season based upon that team. But we have a higher degree of confidence with a pocket passer. I mean, things happen. You know, Burrow does get hurt. But my goodness, you certainly think you should be having a factor more so for a mobile quarterback, less likely to be starting as many games.
Yeah, and you know, as we talked this morning, that's kind of what we do at Sports Injury Central. It's power rankings, no offense, they are very useful. Obviously, you make a lot of money, you have your power rankings. But power rankings in general are looking backwards. Would you agree? Like, what has the team done?
Yeah, so exactly. The best evidence of that is, how often do I have a bad team that has a positive power rating to go into the year? You know, it's pretty much the exception to the rule. Even teams like, I think the Bears right now are right around, I've got them like middle of the road, eight of clubs. I use the eight of clubs term, meaning the average team in the deck. They are right about power rating wise. Their quarterback's pretty average right now, I think, and their team's pretty average. And but last year they were surging. You know, people like, oh, the Bears haven't been good for years, but they were at the end of last year, they were really almost right there in terms of an average team anyways.
Well, I mean, I haven't gotten into the study of the teams yet, but, you know, I'm always rookie QBs. It's tough, although Caleb Williams, obviously the first pick. But I think it's that Bears defense that drives that engine in terms of if you're going to turn them into a jack of spades or something.
You know, the Bears are fascinating, right? Because they got all these offensive weapons for a team that typically doesn't have wide receivers, and now they got three of them. And then you wonder, all right, but now I got my quarterback from USC, and last time I checked, it gets pretty cold in Chicago. And how's that offense going to translate, you know, come November?
Well, it certainly is going to be interesting. But what we do is we actually look forward. Like, mm-hmm. you know, analytics is very much, you know, throughout a season, what are the chances of this pass or this play or this situation? But we try and go by this week. You know, is the O-line versus D-line matchup in terms of injuries, right? Just in terms of injuries. And that's probably the one thing that we can do to probably tweak or improve power ratings. I mean, a lot of times there's no effect, right? The team's healthy or both sides are, and there's no joy. But that might be the one thing that we can alter a little bit one week to the next, depending on what's happening.
And I had an epiphany based upon my meeting with you and our interaction. I was thinking about my how flawed my power ratings are, even though they largely reflect a lot of the marketplace, in that if I have a team rated like 4 points better than an average team and they go out and win 30-13, well, the next week, they're probably going to be 4.5 or 5 points better than an average team. I'm going to give them an upgrade. And the only question is no upgrade or slight upgrade or significant upgrade. But there are certainly times, I mean, the data of one good game is not nearly as significant as that of cluster injuries that suddenly appear in the O-line, et cetera. And we as bettors were very reluctant. We were always told, don't overreact. Don't overreact to anything. Don't overreact to a blowout win, a blowout loss, or to any one injury. But there are times when you most certainly should react, and there's a significant change. And frankly, the numbers that SIC has shown in terms of their winning percentage is just outstanding, doing nothing else than just looking at disparities between, frankly, a team that is relatively healthy or healthy versus a team that is not.
Yeah, and it all depends on when a team plays another team. I love all the things like, oh, they already beat them twice this year, or they beat them last time at home, and this one's on the road. But you got to really look at beat who. And I'll tell you something, Steve. NFL teams really pay the most attention to the last four weeks of what the opponent did. Because over time, a team morphs from week one to week 18 or even week eight, right? It morphs, and some of that morphing is due to injury and what's available. And I'll give you my observational shout out, and this is good for fantasy stuff too. Props, bettors, and props and fantasy players traditionally hated Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots.
Never know what the heck the guy's going to do, right?
Do you know why?
Yeah, unpredictability. You could have one running back run 20 times, and the next week the running back gets two carries.
But do you know why?
I'm sure it's the matchups of the opponent, probably, and maybe the injuries for New England, right?
Only partly.
Okay.
It is my belief, having talked to other players and observed Bill Belichick, etc., his greatness is that he was secure enough in his job that he was trying to win Super Bowls. Mm. He wasn't trying to post winning records and keep his job. He was trying to win a Super Bowl. So what happens on your way to a Super Bowl? You have to deal with different matchups or different injuries in different situations. I believe he could have fed record numbers to Rob Gronkowski.
Mm.
But number one, he didn't want to beat him up. Number two, he wanted to see what the other guys could do. So on a given day, it may be a matchup where he likes the slot receiver or the running back out of the backfield and check down passes. But essentially, he's trying out plays. So when the situation arrives in a certain moment, be it injury or scheme dictating, he can go back to it. So what a team typically does is, boy, we're doing great with 50 power. Let's just keep running 50 power, but out of a different formation. Mm-hmm. What I believe he does is, we're great with 50 power. Now let's run something else and see if it works. Let's just file that away. So if we lose a regular season game or don't win as much by regular season, I don't care. I'm preparing myself for that one-off postseason game. Now, the reason why I say that is, do you remember when, Steve, Tom Brady injured his thumb before the AFC Championship game?
I don't recall it.
Okay, no. He tore off his thumb. He injured his thumb and whatever. And my theory turned out to be correct. The reason why is Bill Belichick was still installing new plays. He was running a new jet sweep late in the season because of the matchup in preparation for different things that he did. And I think that's unusual. And the way that he runs practice is very situational. He never runs a certain play. It's always a certain play, fourth quarter, 2 minutes left, now run that play. Or you're up by 10, run that play. Everything's very situational. Everyone's heard of never reach for the ball on the one, right? Mm-hmm. You just retain the ball on the goal line. You'll still score. Now, if it's fourth down, okay, reach for the ball at the goal.
I wanted to ask you about that because, like, it's easy for me, math geek, you know, like I was on the chess team. I don't want to brag, you know, but not a lot of contact yeah. there.
No collisions there either.
Yes. If it's it's so clear, if I see one more guy, you know, jumping for the pylon on first down, you know, and fumbling out of the end zone, the most dangerous reach of them all, because if you fumble, you're going to lose the ball for certain. And then I'll see on fourth down and a guy cradling the ball in the middle of his abdomen when he's 6 inches away. And it's like, why don't players have that natural football high IQ for when to, you know, risk it to get in the end zone?
It's a good question. I mean, it's comes down to situational football, but yeah, and matchup football and different things and techniques and what you train. Yeah.
I have an injury question for you. So I'm convinced, and pro football quarterbacks have gotten good at this. As they're running out of bounds, they'll switch from the right to the left if they're running to the right, and they'll bring the ball forward as far as possible, knowing it's almost impossible physically for a defender to appear and be able to swat the ball against their body back into play as for a fumble. Obviously, we're going to gain more diving for the pylon and getting to the end zone. Is it just an injury for the running backs and wide receivers, but especially running backs or tight ends? Shouldn't they be doing that on every play, especially, and I think they largely do, trying to get a first down, but they never do it just to get an extra yard, and they would pick up an extra yard if they dove like that.
You're right, but I think ball security is such a premium.
Never seen a guy fumble diving for the out-of-bounds the fictitious pylon, though.
No,
the ball goes out of the end zone. It doesn't go.
No, I yeah. get it. And yeah. and there's a lot of things, which brings up an interesting point. I had this conversation with another friend of mine. I mean, in general, I mean, we had the conversation last week with Juan Parker about football and football IQ. And, mm-hmm. you know, football is a very cerebral sport. You cannot. I mean, if you're just very athletic and shoot the ball and a great basketball player, you don't have to be very cerebral. You can be very intuitive in play. You can even make some not the best decisions in the world, but your skill set is there. Football is such a team sport, is you have to be in the right place, right time, right coverage, right pass coverage, mm-hmm. identify the Mike linebacker, et cetera. And some of it is you have to have football IQ to play the game.
Yeah, and especially – you see this, and teams have frankly gotten much, much better at it. The drive, it's sometimes more confusing at the end of a game, but at the end of the first half, that whole idea of this is going to be the last possession of the first half, right? And so I want to milk that clock down, save my timeouts, get that clock under 35 seconds, and then I can go balls to the wall to score at that point in time. And yet you'll still see some teams, you know, mess it up. And same thing, like at the end of a game, if there's 2 minutes and 4 seconds left, for instance, that's a draw play in every one of my 2 minute drills, you know, against the pass defense.
No question. But, you know, the thing that we forget is, okay, I'll let you in on a little secret. There were lots of times when I was in the NFL, I always recorded the game at home. Why? First of all, when I watch a game on the sideline, I don't always see the flow of the game. Because I'm not following the ball.
Yes.
I'm looking for injuries and protecting players. So we're looking at the gunner sometimes. We're looking 3 extra seconds at the quarterback, not downfield where mm-hmm. the ball was thrown. And so a lot of times I would go home and try and watch the game or really what happened, or maybe I was tending to somebody. Mm-hmm. And that's true, too, here of football players. It's a very – you're – there's a lot going on. We in TV go, the clock's ticking. Here you go. This, that, the other. But when you're
in the madness,
it's not that easy. So I have to credit well-coached teams and or quarterbacks. You think about it, a quarterback or a player that needs to dive, there's no line on the field. You know, you're in the middle of the grass and you know to reach to get to the 47-yard line because that's the first down. I mean, that's not as easy as it seems.
Especially like with these car crash collisions. There's a 36 and a half of each game.
There's a lot that goes on. Yes, is, and when you're in the heat of battle on the field of play, it's different than when we watch it at home on TV, is all I say.
Sure. And because of that, you don't want to put even more on folks' plates. Like I've often said, like the hook and lateral, I love the hook and lateral play. And it's like when a team's down like 10 late in the third quarter, I mean, teams, I think, utilize it about right, like on fourth down plays late in the game, they do use it, but they never use it when things are getting semi desperate. And I really think that that should be a play, like especially a third and long play when you're down two scores and you're late in the second half or early in the fourth quarter. I'm shocked that the NFL, it doesn't utilize that because it always works, frankly. Always. It works. It worked for Travis Kelce when he was just improvising it.
Well, I mean, I'm a little crazy. I mean, okay, so right, I was supposed to coach my son's flag football team, but then COVID hit. Mm-hmm. And at the time, he would have been like 7, okay? And the rule there, flag football, is there are no fumbles. Mm-hmm. If the ball hits the ground, it's dead.
Should be like, what is it? Is that Aussie rules football where they just bump? The kids should be bumping the ball back and forth then, right? Because there's no fumbles.
Well, if there's no fumbles, what I was planning to do that year for the 7-year-olds is almost like rugby. Teach them just to continue. Because what happens? They come all together where the ball carrier is. The ball carrier tries to dance around and he gets flagpole. If they're all converging here and you flip the ball out, there you go. And guess what? If you don't complete the lateral, it's not a fumble. Yeah. It's just a dead ball. I mean, who cares if it's a dead ball 2 yards behind the spot or where it would have been a dead ball with your flagpole, right?
So emergency meeting of the Pee Wee football, flag football league to make laterals, more than one lateral per play illegal.
Well, COVID hit and we never implemented the strategy. So we never could do it that year. The other crazy one I always said was the Tom Brady tuck rule. Think about this. If your arm comes forward, this is the tuck rule, it is a forward pass regardless of the direction of what you do until either the ball hits your body or the second hand touches the ball. Mm-hmm. That's the tuck rule. That's why it was correctly ruled a pass, even though everyone eye test it wasn't a pass.
Sure.
Okay, it was a fumble. So I often asked coaches, so why don't you teach your quarterback to drop back and just wave the ball in one hand? And if you wave, once you start forward, the second hand doesn't touch. It's still a forward pass. And if you get sacked, you just drop the ball.
Oh.
And it's an incomplete pass. And it's not a fumble. You get hit and the ball comes flying out of your hand. It's not a fumble. Just wave the ball. And everyone's like looking at me, you're crazy. But they changed the rule now. So that you can't do that anymore. The tuck rule is no longer.
But I give Harbaugh a lot of credit because famously, like...
Which Harbaugh?
I mix them up. So that's why I say Harbaugh, so I'm never wrong. But the NFL Harbaugh.
Which one? There's two now.
the Baltimore Harbaugh. That he held like 6 guys when he was punting and he was taking the intentional safety at the end of the game. And he just told everyone, just hold everyone on the line of scrimmage. And the punters run around, tick, tick, tick. But like there's flags all over the place from multiple O-line, you know, holding penalties.
Well, there are some inconsistencies there. First of all, like the reason I say which Harbaugh is, we've talked a lot here about Jim Harbaugh. We love Jim Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh is a quarterback with the Chargers. I know him fairly well, et cetera. So that's which Harbaugh. But there's a guy who, Bob Spear, Dr. Spear, who is part of Sports Injury Central. He worked with me at the Chargers who, without fail, and he's right, I have to give him credit, will text me at the end of a football game and go, intentional hold, okay? Think about this. If you have 20 seconds left in a football game and, you know, the Patrick Mahomes come back from the Bills, throw it downfield.
Tackle
everyone in the line of scrimmage. The clock still runs.
Quarterback's running around.
Throws it away.
Seven seconds.
You got a 5-yard penalty. Who cares?
That's right.
You do it again. Then if the team has the ball on the 25 or 30-yard line, great. You give them the ball, a couple 5-yard penalties. They're left with a Hail Mary. There's no field goal attempt to win the game.
Exactly. And my understanding is they changed the rule. so that if you do this on consecutive plays,
purposeful
now,
penalties,
then the no time runs off the clock.
Yes,
but you can still do it once. You can still do it for one. And also, you know what? You don't have to intentionally foul to foul. Meaning, I mean, there's grabbing of jersey going on all the time, anyways. So why not? You know, Travis Kelce is not going to run past you. He's not that fleet that you can't get, you know, a nice tug on a jersey and slow him down. And yeah, you'll probably get called for the holdings. But it's not intentional exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So for this upcoming football season, you have some new things. You're thinking that the new kickoff rule is going to be a big deal.
Yes. I believe it's going to promote scoring. I think the average field position is going to, right now, teams get the ball and they start out like close to the 25, typically. Now I think they're going to start out closer to the 29, because what's going to happen is that you kick the ball off and all of your, the kicking team, all their defenders are going to be on the 40, all right? The other team is going to have most of their blockers on 35 and two kick returners. Even if by some miracle you kick perfectly to the one-inch line, think about this. So the kick returner, he's fast. He starts on the goal line. And he's faster than all the defenders who are on the 40. So they're only going to meet at the earliest at the 20, a little bit past the 20, in fact, because I got the faster guy. And by the way, I got nine guys blocking also. So it seems realistic to me that we're going to be able to achieve the team on offense, start the ball at close to the 30. It is going to be fascinating. No one's allowed to move until the ball is touched by the receiving team or the ball hits the ground. So because of that, you don't want to kick high kicks anymore. You want a kicker that kicks the most ugly, corkscrewing, hard to catch, left footed if possible kick that lands as close to the end zone as possible. Because if it goes in the end zone to fly, you start on the 30. So there's not much of a penalty really to kick it in the end zone, because like I said, I think most teams are going to start in the 29 anyways. So my goal as a kicker is kick the ugliest ball possible that's going to land right on the goal line, making it really difficult for the kick returner to decide should he indeed return it or not. So I think having a very specialized kicker is the way every team's going to go. Even the Kansas City Chiefs, who did bring up the idea of having a defender kick the ball off. And if you could indeed have a defender just kick the ball to the two accurately, now you got a safety. Now you got an 11th defender instead of a kicker that's going to get destroyed. So there's reason why they're considering it, but I think everyone's going to go with a specialized kicker.
Yeah, you know, I think it makes some sense. It'll be interesting to play out. Obviously, it's been done at the developmental football leagues or the other leagues, and it's an interesting theory to work out here.
I liked your theory of, or your first thought in pre-production. We spoke about this. First score, yes, no, 6.5 or 7.5 minutes, especially, you know, the ugly lower, you know, total teams like the Carolinas or the Tennessees, that will there be a score in the first 7 minutes, 30 seconds? What's going to be a lot easier to score when you fumble the kickoff than when you take a knee and start, you know, like you did last year. So like literally we're going to get a couple games where we're just going to get a free roll win on fumbled kickoffs. Not to mention we'll get a free roll on a few kickoff return touchdowns, and better field position can make all the difference in the world. You know, when you drive down and kick a field goal, that can run 7 minutes off the clock, you know, when you start on the 20, but, or the 25, but now you start on the 30, it really becomes, it's almost like, even with ball control, you really need a lot of, you know, third down conversions and 14 play drives to run off that 7 minutes and 30 seconds.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we appreciate the morning here and helping us tweak our little algorithms and our six score and how gamblers like yourself might use what we have here. Anything else you want to chat on or promote before we let you go here?
You know, just on Twitter, I'm at Fezzik Sports. And I only sell at pregame. I want to mention that. Mm-hmm. So there's someone pretending to be me out there. And if you don't see me at Fezzik Sports on Twitter, that's not me. All right. So go ahead and be careful.
How many knockoffs or copycat accounts have you had?
Well, there's one guy, but he's done it multiple times and multiple different, you know, websites and URLs and the like. And unfortunately, it's not just me. So just be careful, you know, what you're buying and who you're talking to. And the like. And I really want to comment on, like, so I'm right here in the SIC offices, and like the level of complexity, we've been talking about this, but I love the idea of taking like a snapshot of the entire offense and defense and showing in color coded, green, good to go, red, injured. That's that's pretty spectacular and what or a really great tool to utilize, you know, just to be able to take a snapshot of the injury status of a team.
Well, that's what we hope to do. And the other thing is that we always say, Steve, is we're really the only source of injury analysis, true injury analysis. Most of the other sites are injury reporting. There's a difference. We're trying to say, this is what we see. Look, the teams aren't liars. They're just wired to hide the truth from the other team, thus the general public. So that's kind of what we sort of specialize in.
And as a bettor, we are very binary as bettors. Is Porzingis playing? Then he's 100%. Or if is Porzingis out, he's not. Oh, if he isn't starting, then he's not close to 100%. Like, then ultimately, you're the doc. You know what the injury is. You know what the recovery level is and how fast someone recovers. And so this whole, the player is either at 100% or 0% just doesn't work.
That's why we do.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Give him a 6 score, right?
Yes.
What percent is he? All right, the great Steve Fezzik, thank you for coming into studio and coming on this podcast. We look forward to doing a lot more with you.
Dr. Chow, I'm humbled to be just here in the offices watching the sausage getting made as we speak. So it's just spectacular.
Thank you. All right, we'll take a break and then we'll continue with the podcast. All right, welcome to part 2 of the Pro Football Doc Sports Injury Central podcast. It's great to have Steve Fezzik. That was a great visit that we had with him, not just a show. He's basically spent the day with us at Sports Injury Central. Lots of commonalities. We're going to do a lot more with Steve. A lot of new things for Sports Injury Central for the coming year. We're going to do a lot of things with Steve. I mean, his credentials, besides being a nice guy, and I like chatting with him, and it was great, all his input on how to make Sports Injury Central better. But, you know, he's won, what, 2 straight Westgate contests and like a right. bunch of other things? That's just crazy insane. Imagine what he can do with our injury information, right? That's kind of what we're interested in. But it was great to have him on there. All right, Taylor, what else we got? We got NBA Finals. We got baseball going. We got U.S. Open coming up. We got WNBA now on the radar screen.
There's a lot of sports, a lot of finals and the championships. Let's start with the NBA Finals real quick. So last game, Boston just took a 2-0 lead. At the end of the game, there was a little video we sent and analyzed about Porzingis. What did you see through that video, and did he harm the calf again?
Not much. I mean, it was a kind of awkward play and collision. We don't see a big injury, re-injury that would say he's out for the rest of the NBA Finals. You know, could it limit some minutes or his activity a little bit? Maybe, but the good news is not much. What we said coming into the finals was that we were more worried about Luka Doncic than Kristaps Porzingis for a couple reasons. I think we all saw the pictures now of Luka with his knee on ice and bandaged up in the ribs or the right side all bandaged up. He's a warrior. But he's key. No Luka and no Mavs, right? Of course, there's Kyrie Irving, but no Kristaps. That doesn't eliminate the Celtics. So that's part of what we're saying. We do think Porzingis is going to be okay, but our worry all along was more Luka. And, you know, I don't think it's going to be a series sweep, right? But our 6 score numbers favored Boston all along. The Mavs will have their day. One of these 2 upcoming games in Dallas, I would assume, right?
Did you see those little mind games from the Mavs? Because they downgraded him right before the game. It was maybe a couple hours. Then you had, you know, just the heavily bandaged him. When he walked into the stadium, he was very, like, you know, walking like a post, very stiff. There is still obviously a little bit of truth, right? They're not going to lie and just make up a back injury. But, I mean.
Oh, I don't think they're lying. If anything, they're trying to give disclosure so they don't get fined, because in this gambling world, mm-hmm. you gotta, like,
if there was video of him being stiff and him bandaged up and they didn't list him as questionable, there would be a lot of kerfluffle.
Yeah, because Kidd mentioned the exact play he got ran into on a play, and he was grabbing a little bit. So he was trying to, like he said, there was exact details on the exact play. So
I don't think they're making it up, but yeah. I think they're, if anything, if you don't list them as questionable and it turns out to be an injury, then, you know, in this day and age, and I think the NBA is sensitive with the Dante Porter stuff. They're sensitive about that information. Yeah. All sports leagues should be. Right? So I don't think it's gamesmanship there.
So, Doc, another big tournament coming up this week, the U.S. Open. We always talk about Tiger, right? He missed the cut last time. Will he make the cut again? There are a couple other injuries, though, we can mention. Just talk about Tiger first. Is it the same thing, same issue?
What type of course is it? I have to admit my golf knowledge. I'm not up on where is the U.S. Open this year and what type of course is it?
Let me see right here. U.S. Open, it's in Queens, New York every year.
No, it's not.
Are you sure?
Yes. 100%.
It's at U.S. Open Tennis, correct. U.S. Open, it's at Pinehurst. At the 124th U.S. Open this year, it's at Pinehurst. North Carolina.
Queens. I don't think they even have a golf course in Queens. Come on.
You're probably right. Yes.
I am much less every year. I mean, come on.
Yes. So North Carolina.
We'll put that in the blooper reel for you.
Yes. Tony Reale can talk to me. Yes.
On the fly research, U.S. Open. Yes. Boom. Queens, though. Obviously, the U.S. Open travels, right? I mean, it's been played at Torrey Pines here a couple times. And
right. You
know, yeah. I mean, U.S. Open, long, rough, hard courses, distance, hilly, hard cut. I think it'd be a pleasant surprise if Tiger makes the cut. He's not going to get miraculously better. This is the new norm. As far as Åberg and the meniscus, he seemed to have played well so far, but
yeah,
we'll see if he can hold up there.
And, it seems like every other tournament for him, Doc. Like he'll play good on one tournament, and then the next one he'll miss the cut like he did recently.
I think it's going to be, in all these golf fantasy games, I don't think I'm, unless he's priced super low, I don't think I'd be taking Åberg. Rom?
Yeah, that's the big one with his foot.
His foot, you can recover from an infection pretty quickly. But I think it's got to affect him. Is it just me, or is he not in tip-top shape, or is that, or I'm getting fooled by the video?
He hasn't played well this year. I feel like a lot of the players, once they go over to Live, Doc, it falls off a little bit. But yeah, it's not the same. Rom was considered in a category like Scheffler back a couple of years ago, right? He was winning every single tournament. And now it seems, like you said, it's kind of dipped off a little bit.
I mean, I get it's weird for me, unless it's a rec golfer, to see him in shorts. That's the video I saw John Rahm. I get it's different. Maybe it has to do with his fashion coordinator, but who's put on more weight since the last time I saw him? Tua Tagovailoa or John Rahm? It might be John Rahm.
Yeah. You're probably right, yes. Do you want to talk about the Tua? We haven't really fully got into that. We're going to write some stuff at Six Court in a little bit. But.
Yeah, we need to do the analysis first. I don't want to shoot from the hip, but really, if I remember correctly, coming in the last year, because of the concussions, Tua wanted to take hits better. And yes, the jiu-jitsu training don't hit his head, but he was putting on weight. And then he had a pretty good season, and now he's taken off weight. So I think we need to do a little more research before I jump in. You know me, I don't love the carny trick. Weight for everyone is not the same. What was his reasoning? What was his logic? How much weight is it? Where are we at before we come up with a conclusion? But it does seem a little bit unusual for a player to say, I want to go up, and now I want to come back down. I mean, what really happened there is the question.
When the concussion thing is still an obvious issue, it's not like that has gone away. There would be, like you said, there's a reason.
Well, he didn't have a concussion again last year. Good on him, right? Yes. At least nothing nuts. So good on him. He had a good year. Probably his best year to date, right?
Statistically, yes. Yeah. Another tournament that's going on, College Baseball World Series. They're at their Elite Eight version of them. Brandon Montgomery, I gave you the video of him rounding the bases. What did you see on him and his injury on his ankle?
Oh, that was not good. I tweeted, I was in the middle of my own son's baseball games. Laughed. It was obviously right. I mean, right ankle fracture dislocation. Ankle fracture dislocation. Now, in the big picture, it should not affect his Major League Baseball career and wherever he's going to go, but it's a good 9 months of recovery or more. He's not playing, obviously.
His team advanced without him. He leads his team in RBIs and second in home runs, so it'll be a big loss for them going forward. But that, like you said, he is a prospect. So, like you said, it's not something that's going to affect him down the road, which is good.
It won't affect him for next season, but if a team is drafting him to try and develop him for the later part of this season, it will affect that for sure. Short term, and he's not going to be with his team.
Non-injury topic, Doc, but a big thing. We talked about her in a couple podcasts in the past. Caitlin Clark not being no Olympics for her. There's many different reasons. You know, they said she's not going to have a lot of playing time, so a lot of fans would be mad that they don't see her. Do you think there's some other issues, or why would they not pick the most popular basketball player on the team?
Well, there's a lot of things that we could say, and I'm not saying, but here's my conclusion. The big winner in this is Caitlin Clark. Mm-hmm. Did you hear her response? She says a class A answer the way around. Yep, it gives me something to shoot for. I'm not mad at it. I didn't deserve it. It gives me something to get better. These are the 12 best players in the world. Da 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 da. Super good. And I think, believe it or not, if someone and the WNBA players listen to those comments, it's going to give her some street cred and rookie cred of where she's acknowledging, you know, what's going on. So I think she's the big winner in all this. But I don't know. I mean, I'm a little torn on this. And here's what I mean. If you are picking players based on popularity, that's wrong. That's not the way to do it.
Right.
If you're afraid of picking players based on popularity / they're not getting enough playing time, you know, you're not going to do well either. Now, when the Dream Team back in the day, they put Christian Laettner on the team because they had a designated college spot. Right. And that was historical because it used to all be college, no NBA players. Mm-hmm. So they reserved one spot. So that's Laettner. Caitlin Clark isn't in college. This is the WNBA. They're not worried about saving a spot. I mean, is there a manager's pick in this, or is it the 12 best players? I mean, if it's the 12 best players, let me ask this question. Is she one of the 12 best players in the WNBA? Honest question.
I don't think currently, no. I think that's what I think personally, just watching the WNBA. Yeah.
And, you know, look, there's lots of controversy back in the day in the NBA Dream Team. You know, did John Stockton belong? Maybe, but they needed a point guard, right? Yeah. And positionally they did. Now, sometimes you may not be one of the 12 best, but there's a position of need, right? And I don't know the breakdown of the WNBA. I think, you know, to fall trap to, if they were trying to shoehorn Caitlin Clark in because of her popularity, I think that's wrong. Excluding Caitlin Clark for, you know, backlash purposes or other, I think that's wrong. Play it straight. Mm-hmm. Is she one of the 12 best, and does she fit the puzzle of the team? If she does, put them on the team. If she doesn't, don't put them on the team, right? And hopefully it was that straightforward. I don't know.
Because the NBA does
that. I get a lot of media say this is the biggest mistake they've ever made. You're trying to grow the game, and you're not growing the game with her, this, that, the other. I don't know. I mean, if she doesn't deserve to be on the 12, it's a little fake to grow the game that way, isn't it? I mean, so the question is, and I don't know the answers, does she deserve to be one of the 12? If she does, put her on the team. If she doesn't, leave her off the team.
Right.
That's the way I would look at it. I don't know enough to say that she does or doesn't. By popularity, she certainly does. But right. I'll tell you, we last week talked about the Tiger Woods analogy about how the golfers, we made this tour and here comes the Johnny Come Lately person. Mm-hmm. I get it. Yeah, the WNBA veterans made this league, but you got ultimately, if Caitlin Clark continues down the path that she is, it's not going to take her long to curry the favor of the entire league and mm-hmm. her opponents, because she's doing it the right way, it really seems like to me.
So the final thing, Doc, a little strange incident happened on the baseball diamond yesterday between the Blue Jays and the Athletics. Tell me your thoughts on what the pitcher was doing there.
Being the baseball expert that I am, okay, here's my first reaction to that. First of all, we all know in Oakland the field is cavernous, right? Because it's a baseball, essentially the last remaining dual-use stadium, right?
Right. Right.
I guess it's not dual use right now because the Raiders aren't playing there, but whatever, you get the point. It was built that way. And so cavernous foul area. But my first comment on that, first of all, the first initial thing was, what the heck? You got prank show and some, you know, you hired a defensive safety to take the guy out? I mean, that's what it looked like. But obviously it was a mistake. He didn't mean to. My second thing was, are you kidding me? In the pony baseball tournament that my 11U son is in, and I'm one of the assistant coaches. Like, there's just three guys. I'm the number three, whatever. I'm the bench coach, whatever. I got to wear baseball pants, okay? And even in pony rules, you can't sit on a can of balls outside the dugout, and that's for little kid baseball. What are they doing sitting out there anyways? You know, it's like, I didn't understand that, first of all. You know, I do think it was accidental.
Okay. Yeah.
But what are they doing in the first place out there? I mean, you shouldn't have a random bat out there laying out there, right? Because someone could trip over. They have these people out there. And again, it's cavernous. I mean, I'm sure there'll be an instantaneous rule. You got to stay in the dugout, right? And that's easy. They have that rule in little kid baseball. You got to stay in the dugout. I mean, I didn't understand that. But the sight unseen one is the umpires get a lot of grief. Let me give a gold star to that first base umpire. He was stride for stride. He was right there to make the call. Now, admittedly, I don't think he knew what call to make initially. Like, what the
heck? He's down for a second,
right? Because now, to be fair, he's looking at the first baseman and he's looking at the ball, and you know, he's not looking at the surroundings. But go watch that film. He is stride for stride hustling over there. That guy was in prime A position to make the call. I think in the beginning, though, he didn't know what call to make. Like, what just happened here?
No, he stopped for a second, and like you said, looks out on the base coaches and said, looks for some help. Because so yeah,
what just happened here, right? You know, we confer on that one. But the other thing I'd say is, as shocking as it was to the A's player, believe it or not, when you get knocked ass over tea kettle that way, and it's a complete surprise. Think about MFL examples. Back in the day when they showed You Got Jacked, the wide receiver that went just flying out yard sale. The crackback block on an unseen one, it's an unbelievable visual. Mm-hmm. But in general, those guys don't get hurt because you're not tensing up against it. You're just, your whole body gets thrown because you're not ready for it. And it makes for incredible visual, but thankfully, hopefully, not much injury or damage.
There you go. All right, Doc, I just want to end up and final plug the Euro. The Euros are starting on Friday, big soccer tournament. We have a big guide at sixscore.com, all the biggest injuries covered there. All right.
Yeah. We'll continue in all sports and different things. The Euros being one of them, golf, et cetera. And we got a What's that?
Boxing as well with
Iron Mike. Boxing, yes. We got us a few Mike Tyson, Iron Mike. Iron Mike needs some iron.
Yes.
Anemia, that's what caused it. And yes, it was rescheduled for later this year, which is what we thought, on a Friday, et cetera. And it's summertime. You got to get me more analysis on Joey Chestnut and the hot dog eating contest. Yes. I mean, we're joking about that, but that was a guaranteed winner that year.
Coming up with the Olympics. Yep, we gotta continue all the non-football for now, including football.
Absolutely. And Olympic stuff as need be, too. All right, thanks for watching Sports Injury Central Pro Football Doc Podcast. Follow Steve Fezzik, Fezzik Sports. We're going to do a lot with him this year. Steve will add a lot to what we're doing already. He's one of the most respected gamblers in the world. And his insight will be good with our injury information and knowledge. And, subscribe on YouTube, give us a 5-star review or Apple Podcasts, wherever you're listening to this. Thanks for listening and watching.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.